Once our weekly sessions on gardening wrapped up, the rain began to fall again. That's a feature, not a bug, of living in our region. The rain falls outside the growing season. That alone makes gardening a little trickier where we live. Lynn Kunzman from Jackson County Master Gardeners will continue to visit with us monthly through the fall and winter to talk about gardening. If you have a question or a story to share, come on down, 800-838-3760 and jx@jeffnet.org. Lynn, welcome back to the Jefferson Exchange.
Good to be here.
So, you have a big event coming up that you wanted to talk about. Winter Dreams Summer Gardens 2021, November 5, 6, and 13. What's it all about?
That's right. So, normally, Jackson County Master Gardeners has two big events in any given year. The first being Spring Garden Fair, which happens that first weekend in May. And then we also have the first weekend in November, this event called Winter Dreams Summer Gardens, and it is an educational, normally it's just a one-day event, and there are usually about 40 different workshops that people can choose from. They take four different workshops throughout the day, and a variety of speakers on lots of different topics usually presents at that event. Mm-hmm. Since COVID, of course, we haven't been able to do those in-person events. And so this year we put together for the first time a remote event. And it consists of 15 different presentations given over the course of those 3 days that you mentioned, the 5th, the 6th, and the 13th. And people can go to our website, look up what the courses are about, and sign up. It's a $20 fee, and basically, because we're recording those presentations, you can watch them at any time. But we'll be giving them on the 5th, the 6th, and 13th live over the internet.
So, right, so that's Friday, Saturday, continue. Saturday, 5, 6,
mm-hmm.
and 13.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there are several presenters, several from the college, several from our research station here on Hanley Road, a couple of our folks from, one of our folks from Land Stewards is giving a presentation. So lots of different stuff. And all that information is on our website at jacksoncountymga.org.
All right, I'll have to make sure that we're linked directly to that, because I know we are linked
right.
to you generally,
so, yeah,
but I want to make sure we're linking.
Winter Dreams link right there on that page mm-hmm. that you can click on, and then you can go and look at all the course descriptions and the descriptions of the presenters. There are little bios of each presenter on there. So there are some master gardeners, there are some university professors, and then people from Oregon Master Gardeners Association from up north are coming down to present, and then some other folks from our research.
And let's see, the 2:45 to 4 p.m., that's the fifth lecture of the day. Oh, I see Lynn Kunzman there on November 5th, and Lynn Kunzman again on November 6th. So you are part
right.
of this mix as well. Now, you've actually done some online instruction already. I know I picked up on some of your stuff.
I have, mm-hmm. So I'm doing on the 5th. I am doing the Native Y Natives, so, you know, that's mm-hmm. my baby. And then, so like 7 steps that everybody can take in their gardens to help pollinators and increase our insect and bird populations. So that's the first program that I'm doing on the 5th, and then on the whatever the next day is,
sixth,
I'm presenting. I'm doing growing vegetables in the Rogue Valley, which is kind of a unique, you know, once again, the Rogue Valley is not the Pacific Northwest. And so we have very unique, as you mentioned earlier, growing seasons. We don't get rain during our traditional summer growing season. And so growing vegetables here in the Valley, we do it very successfully. But of course, you have to plan for irrigation and all those things. So, yeah.
Right. So let's come back to the natives part, because we talked about this a fair amount, and we'll continue to do so as long as we talk to each other on the radio here. But is there one plant above all others that is like the central, like this is the one you got to have? You know,
Well, there are what we call keystone plants.
Mm-hmm.
That
was the word I was looking for, keystone.
keystone plants. That's what they're referred to as. And it's kind of an important word to remember. The keystone is like in the Roman arches, the keystone was that odd-shaped stone at the top that held everything else in place, right? Mm-hmm. So keystone plants in an ecosystem are really the things that are the main drivers of ecosystem health. So in our area, in almost every area across the United States, the three big ones, it's primarily oaks in most other areas besides our Southern Oregon area here. Here in Southern Oregon, willow is a huge keystone plant. Huh. It supports 330 different species of butterfly and moth. And so, for birds to be able to go and forage for those for their young in the spring, that's a huge, huge thing. Plus, willows produce immense amounts of pollen early, early in the spring for our native bees. So, really important. Prunus, the genus Prunus, which are cherries, mm-hmm. our native cherries, are one of the keystone plants, and of course, oaks. So if you can put those in your yards, those as trees, mm-hmm. that's a great thing to keep in mind, those three. And then when you go down to shrubs, there are keystone shrubs as well. Our native huckleberry is a really good one. Blackberries, although people don't want the non-native blackberry, which are those things that are growing all over the valley.
The Himalaya
berries, yeah, those are not a good one. But other berries that you might be putting in your yard, wild roses, wild California lilacs, those are all really, really good keystone plants.
The California lilac is interesting because it's similar in color to the other kinds of lilacs, but much smaller kinds of flowers from what I've observed.
Yeah, it's a totally different family, and Ceanothus is the genus name for that, and it comes in both evergreen and deciduous shrubs, that grow out there in the wild, and so there are some really good evergreen landscaping ceanothus that you can get. They do not like a lot of water, and so it makes them a great choice for an area in your yard that you don't want to have to do a lot of irrigation and maintenance on. Sometimes they're a little short-lived, but they are beautiful, and they're covered. The evergreen ones are covered with blue flowers in the spring. Once again, a really good early spring pollinator plant.
Now, do some of these require a fair amount of water when they're young? I've noticed that some of the things we've planted, you got to be pretty intensive about watering in the first year or two. But after that,
and certainly when we're having these heat domes that settle in June, when the plants are young, you put a plant in May, and then you get triple digit heat in the. No plant is going to be able to survive that. And so, yes, young native plants do need some TLC during that first year. But remember that the first year, most of the growth that they make is not going to be above ground. It's root growth down. And once they can get their roots down deep enough to access moisture that's further down in the soil, then the watering becomes much less of an issue. You might water once a week or once a month some of these things once they're established, once they've really become established.
Do they get some really deep roots on them, some of these things?
Absolutely. Native plants will put roots down up to 15 feet deep.
Wow.
So, yeah, even our native grasses can send down roots 10 to 12 feet. And so it's really important to allow them to establish themselves and kind of nurse them along while they're doing that. But once they've got those roots down, then watering becomes much less of an issue.
Lynn Kunzman, our guest once again on the Jefferson Exchange from Jackson County Master Gardeners. This is her monthly visit now. We're doing monthly during the non-growing season part of the year. But you can ask your questions, tell your stories at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. I did check. We are linked directly to the Winter Dreams Summer Gardens 2021 page. So it's available directly from our webpage at jeffexchange.org. The 15-foot roots on some of these natives, it's amazing. And are they able to get through stuff, or is this the key, is to make sure you get them in at the right time of year when the ground is still somewhat soft underneath? Because we've talked about, you know, what happens when you try to dig in the middle of the year, you bounce off the shovel. Because
They're incredibly tenacious, a lot of them. They're out there in the wild. Their seeds are falling in all kinds of varied types of soil and hardness of soil. They are amazingly adept at breaking down through hard, you know, soil matter and rock. And they don't need a lot of, you know, you don't need to prep the soil unduly for them like you do for some non-natives, where you're adding amendments and you're fluffing up the soil and making sure it's got a big enough hole so the roots can spread out. Natives, a lot of our natives, we go out and dibble into the ground. So you have a stick that you plunge into the ground, or like a spading shovel, where you make a slit in the ground, you pop the plant in, and you kind of heel that in with the heel of your boot, and to close the gap that you've made, and that plant will take off. You know, they're tough. The natives that have evolved here have evolved with these kinds of weather conditions and these kinds of soil types. So unless you're taking a streamside plant and trying to put it up on a rocky ridge on your property, you have to think about where the plant occurs naturally in the environment, and kind of provide it with those conditions. But for the most part, they easily get their roots down into the soil.
So to come back to the keystone trees, willows from the genus Prunus and oaks, in the genus Prunus, I mean, does that include things like the Italian plums?
Well, it does, but those aren't our native Prunus. So almost all the stone fruits that you can think of are Prunus. So cherries, plums, those kinds of things. But we have a couple of, you know, native Prunus virginiana here is our native. It's called a choke cherry. Mm-hmm. And they're beautiful little trees. They grow about 20 feet tall, and they send out not just single flowers like our cultivar cherries that we think of from Europe and Asia, but it's a raceme of white flowers, those kind of typical rose kind of flowers. They're in the rose family. But it's a whole little panicle of those things. It's a little raceme of flowers. And then you get a cluster of cherries when those set fruit. And so the tree has these beautiful white drooping racemes of flowers, and then really nice, pretty red to almost black fruit when it ripens completely.
Is it a very similar flavor to a regular cherry, the choke cherry?
Yeah, a little bit. But there's so little fruit around the stone that you can't. People do make juice and jam, you know, those kinds of things out of it. But there's a lot of pit in relation to the actual pulp and fruit that you get out of it. But yes, you can. They can be used. And of course, the birds love them and will scatter them all over your property.
Thank you for the seed scatter, birds.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
We also have a kind of a pinky kind of plum that grows on a tree in the backyard, round fruit, similar to a cherry but larger and.
Right. Yeah, that's one of those ornamental plums. Mm-hmm. They are a Prunus genus. A lot of people have planted that purple foliaged plum, as an ornamental tree, not knowing that the fruit is going to dump all over their yard and make an enormous mess.
Yes.
And also get carried out into the environment by raccoons and bears and whatever comes through your yard, foxes, eating those plums.
I see the seeds back later on. Yes.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. So they do get spread around, and they are they're not native.
Okay.
Yeah.
Darn it. Okay. So we're looking for Prunus virginiana.
There is a plant called the Klamath plum, mm-hmm. which is a native, and I forget the scientific name on that. I would have to look it up. But it's a good choice as well. It's a pretty tree. It has really beautiful autumn foliage, and so that's another option, the Klamath plum. And it's a small plum. It's not a big one, but it is native, and that's the critical thing. You want to be putting natives in.
All right. So, and as for the willows, are we talking like the weeping willows, or a couple different varieties there too, right?
That's the problem with willows. There are our native willows here in the West. The weeping willow comes, once again, from the old world. It's not a native, although it is Salix. It's the right genus, but it's not a native. I don't know. And willows, big willow trees in small lots are a problem because they'll get into your pipes. You know, they are very invasive in pipes. Mm-hmm. And so we don't recommend that people put willows near their homes where they're plumbing and sewer systems are. But if you have a riparian area, we have lots of native willows that grow along our stream sides are what you're looking for. And then I actually, in the nursery out at Extension, I grow a small willow. It only gets about 8 feet tall, and it's from the American Southwest. It's called a blue stem willow,
mm-hmm.
and it's a really pretty plant. It gets very lush, but it just doesn't get very big. It gets about 8 feet tall, 8 feet wide. So it's kind of a pretty ornamental that you can get a little bit closer to your house. And it's because it's a North American native, I feel pretty comfortable offering it to people as, you know, something that's not going to get 30 feet tall and invade their
right.
You know, invade their pipe systems, or, you know, spread all over their yard or that kind of thing.
So not native to the region, but, you know, native to North America.
It's native to North America. And I feel like a lot of our North American natives are going to be, especially the Southwest natives, are going to be moving north,
as
climate changes. Mm-hmm. And so I don't feel too bad. Ideally, it would be best to use the local natives that that we have here in the valley. But I feel like if people want something in a yard setting, a smaller yard setting, that blue stem willow is a better choice.
Lynn Kunzman from Jackson County Master Gardeners joins us once again here on the Jefferson Exchange for our gardening segment now being monthly through the non-growing season. About the blackberries. We're looking at the keystone shrubs. So how do the native blackberries, as opposed to the ones that grow like crazy, the Himalayans, do the native ones grow at a high rate of speed too?
They don't. I mean, the native berries are kind of small and they tend to cling to the ground. They're not, and then there are the berries that you see when you're over on the coast, like the salmon berries and thimbleberries. Those are our native berries. But they're more slow growing, and they don't tend to spread the way the Himalayas, but they can't, and that's why they've been out competed in so many places, mm-hmm. by the Himalaya berries.
Okay.
You know, they just aren't that rampant in their growth.
Okay, so in a situation where you got them side by side, the Himalaya berries are going to outcompete the native ones.
God, yeah.
Yeah, everything else, too.
Yeah, they're horrific.
Brian in Redding called in a question. He wants to know about tulip bulbs. How old can tulip bulbs be and still be effective, and how do you preserve them after digging them up?
Oh, okay. So, well, any bulb is gonna, if you don't keep it in if you're trying to save them over a season, you need to put them in a brown paper bag in like wood chips or something like animal bedding, those wood shavings,
mm-hmm.
Like you get them in the store, right? When you buy you buy bulbs in the store, they come in some woody type of material, dry material. The problem is that those are, because they're storage organs, they're not going to last. You can't pull them out and just save them for 3 years. They need to send up a shoot that will photosynthesize and send more sugar down into that storage organ every season. And so they really should be planted in the year that they're dug. So right now, you know, people might be digging and replanting, separating and replanting things like their tulips. You know, if you have a big clump of tulips and you want to spread them out, I wouldn't recommend storing them for more than a few months, mm-hmm. because they start to desiccate.
Sure.
And then they're not going to be able to sprout. You're going to lose them. So I like to tell people, they need to go in the ground if you're digging and separating.
Final question, because the music's about to start here, but Stephen and Eugene wants to know about growing salal, the shrub.
Oh, yeah. I don't know anything about it. It would be same as for the wild huckleberries, mm-hmm. or, yeah. Okay, I would say go to Oregon Flora and look at their site for instructions.
Okay, yeah, good-looking berries there, okay, from Gaultheria shallon, salal,
right.
Native plants of North America. Okay, Lynn Kunzman, always a pleasure. Let me get the reminder up again. So we're talking about Winter Dreams Summer Gardens 2021, November 5, 6, and 13. Link online at jeffexchange.org. And Lynn is going to be teaching two of the 15 segments over the course of those 3 days. Lynn, always a pleasure.
Thanks a lot.
All right, take care.